This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Know-How is brought to you by CashFly.
This episode of Know-How is brought to you by DigitalOcean. Simple and fast cloud hosting built for developers. Deploy an SSD cloud server in 55 seconds. Try it today for free. Visit DigitalOcean.com, and once you sign up, be sure to enter the promo code KNOWHOW in the billing section to get your $10 credit. And by Unity, the free personal media server. With Unity, you can access, stream, and share any media stored on your computers from your mobile devices. For more information and to download Unity for free, visit getunity.com/knowhow. That's getyounity.com/knowhow. Today on Know-How,
we've got a gaming extravaganza.
Welcome to Know-How. It's the Twitch show where we build, ban, break, and upgrade. I'm Father Robert Ballasaire.
I'm Brian Burnett.
And for the next half hour to 45 minutes, who knows, we're going to be showing you some of the tech that we've been geeking out to so you can take it home and geek out on your own. Ryan, you have a little problem with my greasy keyboard there?
Yeah, it almost slipped out of my hands while I was doing that little demonstration there.
This is a little bit of a different... Remember, this is a Monday episode. We're not building anything today.
No.
But we are certainly having fun. We know that there's a lot of people out there who want to know how to build a gaming PC, what components to choose for a PC upgrade, and what accessories they want if they want to get into the world of gaming. So Brian and I threw together a little smorgasbord of tech,
that's
procedures,
right.
And we needed one more thing. We needed someone who was truly, truly engaged.
Someone who actually knows what they're talking about?
Right, who doesn't just BS about the stuff, but lives it, walks it, talks it. So, ladies and gentlemen, you may know him from such things as the PC Per website, as well as This Week in Computer Hardware. It's Mr. Ryan Shroud. Thank you very much for coming on to Know How, Ryan.
You guys should have called somebody else.
Is that too much of a build-up?
Yeah, now I got all this stuff I got to live up to. Okay, all right, I'm centered, I'm ready to go. Let's
pressure.
Do this.
We're putting pressure.
Yeah,
lots,
that's right.
Lots of pressure. No, but Ryan, we brought you on because really there is no one else in the
Twitch
TV
yes.
network who said yes to us at this time. Seriously, we love Twitch. We love the fact that you do deep dive on all these components. You know the technology. You know what every vendor is doing to make their own little flavor of the tech. And we thought you would be the perfect person to talk about what components I want in my gaming machine.
Cool. Let's do it.
Let's do it. The first question has to be SSDs because it's gotten way more exciting. It used to be you could be relatively sure of what an SSD was going to do. Either it came from a reputable manufacturer or it didn't, and it had a certain speed attached to it, typically up to about 550 megabytes per second. But the game has switched up with the introduction of PCI-connected and M.2 devices. Can you talk a little bit about the difference between M.2/PCIe and the old SATA Revision 3 standard?
So it was interesting. So SATA, the connection that we have had for the longest time with SSDs, was basically a carryover from what we had on hard drives. And hard drives, as you know, still have not hit the bottleneck of that SATA connection, especially the most recent SATA 3 and or SATA 6 gigabit per second, depending on what you want to call it. But it had some limitations, right? It was kind of limited to the 570-ish to 600, maybe if you really stretched it, megabytes per second range either direction. And actually had limits on your queue depths as well. I think SATA the AHCI interface over SATA is limited to a queue depth of 32. The move over to M.2 was kind of interesting because we knew when M.2 was first being put into notebooks, where the form factor really made a difference, that it was going to be – it's still SATA at first. It was still the same interface. It was just a different connector. So instead of having a 2.5-inch SSD that looked like a mobile spinning disk hard drive, I had these little gum stick-looking devices that had some connectors on one end of it. But it was still connecting over the same electronic and interface, right? So it was still 6 gigabits per second. It was still AHCI. You still had the same queue depth limits with that. And it wasn't until a little bit later that we started to see PCI Express connected devices really start to take over both the add-in card form factor as well as the M.2 form factor. And when you get into PCIe, you are the it's even more complicated because the first the first implementation of PCIe basically still had some of the limitations of AHCI in terms of queue depth, but you had drastically higher throughputs. You know, you could get 1.5 gigabytes per second or above read write on some of these drives. And then more recently, we've run into NVMe, which is a new interface standard built for solid-state drives, built for flash, built for high performance, right? And so it uses PCI Express as the conduit, but the NVMe part is basically a replacement for AHCI. It talks natively to the operating system. It goes to much, much higher queue depths. You get much better performance, much lower latencies on individual IOs and stuff like that. So NVMe is kind of like the future of storage. We're still in a growth period for that and still kind of in a settling in period where some motherboards work really well out of the box with NVMe drives. Some of them need a little tweaking, or you know, sometimes you just find some weird incompatibilities. But that's where the future is, because it's super fast, it's super efficient. It'll work on desktops, it'll work on mobile devices. And that's really kind of the primary differences and the changes we've seen in the SSD market.
Now, let's back that up a little bit, because that's a lot of information. And actually, you did touch upon one of the acronyms that I think people are most puzzled by. Because if you go to the overhead shot, Alex, so these were some of my first SSDs. I think this is a 64 gigabyte Samsung. This is the one that they were sending out in review units of a Dell laptop because they wanted to prove how fast SSDs could go. Hey, wait, is this might even be 32 gig. No, this is 64 gig. I think at the time this was a $1,000 drive.
Wow.
Yeah. And I mean, it was fast switch time, but of course we've way, way past it. This wasn't even SATA revision 2. I think this was SATA revision 1. yeah, and then we went all the way up to 128 gigabyte. I didn't know how you could top that. But we've seen a lot of sort of expansion in this realm. You've got faster and faster all the way up to SATA revision 3 drives, which provided us with, you know, quite a bit of speed. Actually, the one that I've been using is the Savage line when I'm dealing with SATA connected computers. Ooh. But then we move from that to this, and this is that M.2 transition you were talking about. This is actually an M.2 drive mounted on top of a PCI Express board. And the idea was you needed four PCIe lanes. You could do it with two, mm-hmm. but then you would have the speed. And this could get you up to, I think it was 1,400 megabytes per second read, 1,000 megabytes per second write. But then, and this is the new hotness, and actually, Ryan, this is the one that you suggested for the ultimate virtual reality gaming machine.
The one we've been building on the new screensavers.
And it's this one. So this is the Samsung, the hotness, the 950 Oof. Pro. This thing is actually pretty incredible. And this does NVMe. Now, to the untrained eye, if I were to open this up, these would look the same. They would both look like M.2 devices, but this speaks NVMe and this one doesn't. What's the difference? You touched a little bit about why NVMe is better, but why is it so much faster? Why is it so much better?
So NVMe is non-volatile memory express. The E just kind of stands for express. And it basically, it takes the communication protocol and boils it down to a very low level. And when it has that, it's basically able to transfer much higher rates, much lower latencies. It's not passing through an AHCI kind of software protocol on the Windows side either. Remember, it's hard to think. Like AHCI, I think it was around before even SATA. It might have been kind of a PATA interface that was legacy converted over, yep. increased in performance a little bit along the way. And the difference is that this interface was built for devices that have tens to hundreds of thousands of IOPS per second, IO operations per second, whereas even the fastest hard drives that you have today are in the couple of hundred IOs per second. And so the interface, like the software stack, just didn't have to handle that much information before. And NVMe kind of rewrites that. But it rewrites it in a way where BIOSes and UEFI implementations have to understand it in a different way. The operating system has to understand it in a different way. And so that's why we're kind of in like the growth stage, the learning stage for all parties still.
Yeah. And unfortunately, that's been the issue, because when people have asked for recommendations, you kind of have to say, well, how old is your motherboard? Because you have an M.2 slot, but it may not support the super fast drive you want.
And is the price versus performance start to go up exponentially as you get closer to?
Well, NVMe, M.2. You're going to pay the most for M.2 NVMe drives right now. I mean, that's pretmium. You will pay top shelf dollars. So you mean I'm kind of cheap, so I typically do premium and then I back down two steps.
Yeah.
And that's where I spend my money. But if you want no compromise speed, is this the fastest one on the market right now, the 950 Pro? I mean, I don't think that Intel even gets close, because I know Intel has an NVMe-enabled drive.
Yep.
Kingston has one that I've played with, but I don't think it's publicly available. And that's about it, right? Just the two?
Yeah. That Samsung 950 Pro is the second line of SSDs that come out that really support NVMe. Intel's 750 series SSDs were the first to do NVMe, and they aren't available in the M.2 form factor.
Right.
They're available in the PCI Express add-in card. And they were really the ones to start to drive NVMe, because they kind of control the platforms to a certain degree about what motherboard vendors put into their BIOS, what kind of entries they have. And so we really needed them to kind of go in first and kind of start paving the pathway into it. But the 950 Pro is still, it's the fastest. And it's the fastest while drawing less power and being in a much smaller form factor, which is pretty impressive.
Well, do you know the off the top of your head the read writes of the 950 Pro?
I want to say it's 2.5 by 1.5. So 2.5 gigs by 1.5 gigs. Yeah.
What?
Actually, I think this is the one that's inside the Predator, the 17, the gaming
laptop. Oh, the laptop? Oh, okay. Yeah. That would make sense.
Because that does 2,500, 1,500. I think this is the only one that can hit that.
I think so. And you can rate them. You can put two of them together. If you've got two slots on your motherboard, you can rate them. We actually did a test where Alan rated three of these together, 303, 512 gig, 950 Pros. And it's an insanely expensive solution. I would not recommend anybody actually do it, but it was an interesting thought experiment nonetheless.
Right. Right. Okay. Now, at some point, we're going to get even higher speeds because they're revving up the PCI spec, right? What are we at right now? 1.1? No, we're at PCI Rev 2, and they're going to Rev 3?
We're at 3.0 right now. We've got PCI Express 3.0.
That's it.
4.0 would be coming out soon. It's interesting because you can increase it by either increasing the amount of lanes of PCI Express you can access, mm-hmm. which is one of the things you can't really do in an M.2 slot today because it's kind of built to connect to four electrical PCIe lanes. But you could do it with an add-in card, right? You could kind of already go above and beyond that. PCIe 4.0 will again double potential throughput. So in theory, as long as these guys build controllers, SSD controllers that can read write at that speed, then we'd have another potential uptake. But I don't think 2.5 by 1.5, none of these drives are really even saturating the PCIe 3.0 bus yet. I think they'll get there, but they're not there yet.
Right. The one I actually saw, the prototype, was an add-in board, but it used M.2, but it used two M.2s over a Rev4 PCIe so that you could actually get a little closer to filling the bus. But yeah, that's fine. All right, so we've got our SSD. We're going to ask a little question about that later on. But one of the other things we wanted to talk to you about, because it's, again, one of these buzzwords that everyone thinks they want, but not a lot of people can explain, is G-Sync. What is G-Sync, and why as a gamer do I want it?
So G-Sync is NVIDIA's brand of variable refresh rate technology. AMD has their own brand called FreeSync. The idea behind G-Sync and FreeSync is that up until recently, I'd say a year and a half ago or so when G-Sync was first released, all displays draw at a fixed rate. It's at 60 hertz. It's pretty standard. Recently, we've seen 120 hertz monitors, even 144 hertz monitors. And the idea is the higher the refresh rate, the better, right? Because it has the ability to draw whatever frames are being rendered, whether it be on your desktop or in a game, faster and more frequently out to your eyes to see. What's the downside to that is it is a fixed refresh rate, so that if your render rate for a game, say you're rendering, you have a 60 hertz 1080p screen, if your game happens to hit a point where it's rendering at 50, if you wanted to avoid screen tearing, you had to enable VSync, which now you went into this kind of weird stutter pattern where you'd see judder and animation because the render rate didn't match the refresh rate. Variable refresh rate basically allows the monitor to refresh the screen at the same speed as the render rate, or at least an even multiple thereof. And so it basically means you get all the benefits of instant update, like no latency, no input lag that you would see with VSync enabled. And you also get the benefit of none of the horizontal tearing, which is a side effect of kind of disabling VSync. So if you're a gamer and you've always seen those options of enable or disable VSync, that's kind of like your trade-off has been, do I want to trade the fastest, most recent frames with the least latency from when you move your mouse to what shows up on the screen at the expense of getting these kind of horizontal tears. If you've ever played a PC game and you kind of move to a left or the right very quickly and you see these horizontal lines where there's part of it's here and then part of it's here, that is a VSync tear. And with G-Sync and FreeSync, you don't really have that as a problem anymore.
Now, this is a really, really big Acer monitor. This is their Acer Predator monitor. It actually really is big. It's a 34-inch, and this is G-Sync enabled. So we're actually very excited to play with this. I think this is the one we're actually going to use for the ultimate virtual reality video game machine thingy-mozer. This does have G-Sync enabled. This will do 4K. But explain it to me in layman's terms. I understand VSync. So if you turn off VSync, you're essentially trading off the smoothness of the video. You're allowing tears in order to get the most recent frames and not lag your video. G-Sync moves that to the monitor?
So essentially, instead of the monitor telling the system when it's going to draw the next frame, the system tells the monitor when it's going to draw the next frame.
Okay.
So there's a range, right? So there's a VRR, variable refresh rate range, that a monitor kind of gets specced at. I think that display goes from like 40 to 100. So anywhere between 40 and 100 hertz or FPS, based on what you're looking at, either your game or your display, the monitor has the ability to, if it's drawn a frame, it's going to wait until it gets a command from the GPU now to say, okay, here's your next one. Go ahead and start drawing from the top to the bottom, as opposed to drawing wherever it happens to be in its refresh cycle, and then where you get the tear line at. Now, the technologies have a couple of differences. G-Sync is probably still considered the better of the two variable refresh platforms. NVIDIA actually has logic built into, like, they actually develop an FPGA module that goes in every G-Sync monitor that helps control some of the things. If you really want to get into, like, discussions of frame doubling, so what happens when the frame rate is below the minimum refresh rate of the monitor, where the monitor can't refresh any slower, otherwise you start to see flickering. There's some logic that goes on how it decides what frame to display, if it doubles up a frame, or if it's going to wait a little bit longer. AMD doesn't have that. They don't have a module in the displays. They handle all of that on the software side in their driver. And so there's some trade-offs versus, you know, flexibility versus compatibility that you have to look at when comparing the two techs.
Now, this is actually a relatively expensive monitor. I mean, yes, it is big, and it's very beautiful when it's on, but you're talking about $1,000, and that's actually kind of a deal for the size of a G-Sync monitor. Why is the tech so expensive? Is it just because of supply and demand and the price is going to go down, or is there an inherent reason why these are going to be more expensive?
So when G-Sync first launched, they were expensive displays. And a lot of it could have been attributed to supply and demand. The most popular G-Sync monitor that Asus made at the time was almost impossible to find in stock. It was always being sold over MSRP by third parties. A lot of that has kind of settled and subsided. The biggest benefit, or one of the biggest benefits that FreeSync offers to AMD users that G-Sync doesn't offer to NVIDIA users, is AMD claims that, hey, we're not going to charge any extra for FreeSync technology over typical display. Uh-huh. NVIDIA has said, you know, they take more of a, you know, we're going to charge, we don't sell the monitor, it's not up to us, it's whatever the market demands and what those guys decide to sell the price. In truth, there's probably about $100 to $150 premium.
Whoa.
For a G-Sync monitor versus a similarly spec'd monitor from FreeSync, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's unfortunate, and it's you could accept it when they were the only player in the market, which they were for a long time, and now there's competition, and you start to see some people bantering back and forth about why that is. But the other reason that you see it on high-end displays is that if you're going to put a technology like G-Sync in a monitor, Asus, Acer, BenQ, all these guys, they're going to put them in their best monitors, right? They're going to use the best panels. They're going to have the highest refresh rates. And so because of that, you're going to get premium components all around. And this is just another premium component aspect added onto it.
See, that is so weird, because how much of that 150 premium is NVIDIA's licensing fee?
They swear that they don't have a licensing fee. What they're actually doing is they're selling that vendor the FPGA, the G-Sync module itself. I have heard that people have said that's about a $50 product, right? And then, you know, if you're Asus, if you're Acer with that display, you know how many you can make. and you say, well, I'm going to price it where I feel like I'll sell through all of them in the expected time frame. And we've seen prices drop a little bit, especially as we saw competition from various vendors releasing G-Sync monitors out into the market. But I think you'll find that for that monitor, I think that's a Predator X34.
Right.
That's like maybe $1,100 or something like that. Mm-hmm. And if you wanted an equivalent non-variable refresh rate version of that display, you'd maybe be $100 to $150 less. But it's still on the expensive side, regardless of whether or not you're getting the G-Sync or the non-G-Sync version.
Well, I think the question for the regular people is, will you have to buy G-Sync? I mean, will this be the must-buy? The feature that you have to add is G-Sync or a FreeSync-capable chipset because you never know where you're going to use it. Or is this just going to stay as a gamer's desire?
It's not a necessary. It really only makes sense for either gamers, and the argument could be made that for like really high-end movie enthusiasts, the idea of playing back 24p video at 24 frames per second, as opposed to doing like interpolation and stuff like that, is useful. But we haven't really seen any software players implement support for variable refresh yet. I think the FreeSync implementation of variable refresh is more open. It's part of the DisplayPort standard, essentially. It's called Adaptive Sync. You'll see more and more displays on that side adapt things. I do kind of believe eventually you might see NVIDIA have to support adaptive sync enabled displays in their driver at some point, but up through now they're kind of not. I have often said though that for a gamer, the benefits of a variable refresh monitor, whether or not you're a Radeon fan or a GeForce fan, the benefits of VRR are tremendous, and it's one of the things that you can't really know until you see it. Right, but once you see it side by side, you plug in your old monitor, you plug in your new monitor, and you see what the benefits are of either a lack of stutter or a lack of screen tearing. There's a reason why we were so high on it on PC Perf for such a long time. It is a transformative, really tech that has changed PC gaming.
Well, Ryan, I'm going to bring in my co-host here because he's been sort of salivating over this, and I want to keep.
I've been learning. I've been absorbing all this information.
You are a gamer. You're way more of a gamer than I. I'm a casual gamer. If this was a $1,000 monitor and you had to pay a $100 premium, would you do it?
I think if I'm already paying $1,000 for a monitor, an extra $100 for that kind of feature wouldn't be the end
crazy,
of the
crazy. Right.
I would probably do it. I mean, I kind of want to see side by side to be able to make that decision for myself. But more than that question, it would be if I had an older kind of gaming rig, would it be worth getting the G-Sync because, like, would it be able powerful enough to play it? Or
that's
like,
actually would I a very make, good question.
Would that make a difference? Or should I just buy it if I have, like, I'm building a new high-end machine and it can take advantage of G-Sync?
So it's interesting because the benefits of a variable refresh display occur most obviously when you are not pegging the maximum refresh rate of the display. If you have a 60 hertz 1080p monitor and every game you play, you can run at 60 frames per second or above, you're not going to see any benefit. If you are getting a super high resolution monitor like that, it's 3440 by 1440. And maybe you're running on a little bit older or maybe a mainstream, mid-range card as opposed to a high-end card. The benefit of G-Sync is that even if you're playing at 45 or 50 or 55 frames per second, which would normally be the worst frame rate you could run at and to either see tearing or to see screen stutter and judder, VRR prevents all of that. So I have often said like a 4K monitor is the best place to see the benefits of G-Sync because no GPU can really render it 60 frames per second consistently at high image quality settings. So you're always going to be in that between 30 and 50 range where the smoothness is more apparent from something like G-Sync or even FreeSync. So it really depends on like the games you play, the settings you want to play at, but all essentially G-Sync can do for you is it assures you that you will not ever have an instance of screen tearing or judder while you're gaming.
Right. Cool. Okay. So, that answers my question because I think if I were in that situation, I might save my money, get a G-Sync monitor and maybe wait a generation before upgrading my next video card or something like that.
I'm actually with you. If I'm going to be spending $1,000 on a monitor, I will spend $1,100 to make sure I get that feature. It sounds like an important enough feature that even if I'm doing occasional gaming, I'd appreciate it in the end. So,
yep.
Cool.
Yeah. I agree.
And at what point, though, Ryan, will G-Sync just be on everything automatically? Because it sounds like one of those features that should eventually be included on every high-end monitor ever sold.
I think the G-Sync brand will not ever be like FreeSync, that. FreeSync / Adaptive Sync will be eventually on most displays. And I think when that actually occurs, you'll have to see NVIDIA support that in some capacity, right? I think what they want to do for the G-Sync brand is they have other ideas on how to improve display technology that are pretty interesting based on some of the rumors we've heard. So I think they'll maybe say, okay, variable refresh, okay, that's standard now. Now we can do X, right? But now you have to have a G-Sync monitor to do that. And that's really kind of NVIDIA's corporate strategy, right? Is they try to create a feature that you really desire to have in order to keep you in that GeForce ecosystem.
Right. Hey, Ryan, we're going to continue. In just a bit, we actually do want to ask you about the Razer Core because you got your hands on one, and we were salivating over that at CES. I love the idea. In fact, that idea is not new, but the implementation was pretty slick. And we also have a question from our listeners, from our know-it-alls, that we want to throw to you. Is that cool? Do you have time for that?
Absolutely. Yep.
Okay. But before we go there, let's go ahead and take a moment to thank the sponsor of this episode of Know How. Now, folks, if you are standing up a service, if you are standing up a new app, if you are trying to put something on the internet, there used to be a way to do it. And that way to used to do it would be for you to rent some space in a colo, buy the hardware, make sure you have someone to maintain the hardware and the software, make sure that you contract with, say, a payments processor and the ISP to get the bandwidth and the financial transaction ability that you need, and then to watch all of it. Make sure it never gets compromised, because compromise would be the end of your business. You could do that. I mean, if you really like working for no reason, you can still do that. But I suggest you try something else. And what I suggest you try is DigitalOcean. DigitalOcean is the easiest way to stand up a new product, a new service, a new app that you either want to push out to the world or just to a few people. Now, we've been using DigitalOcean here at Twit extensively. It's used by over 600,000 developers, including Randall Schwartz, Aaron Newcomb, and myself. The reason why I like it is because I can start small. I could deploy for just a few minutes or a few hours to a few people to try it out, see if my service is actually going to survive the real world. Maybe send an invite to a couple of friends to see if they like what I've built. And then with just a push of a button, I can expand that hour or minute deployment to a global deployment across all of DigitalOcean servers and data centers. It's really that simple for you to grow your business from new to global. Now, you can deploy and configure your droplets. These are these containers that you can put your services into via a streamlined control panel or a simple API. And you get to choose your OS. This is not one of those services where they shoehorn you into an OS that they like. You can use Ubuntu, CentOS, Debian, Fedora, CoreOS, and FreeBSD. You can select from one of the many pre-configured one-click installs like Drupal, Docker, and Node.js to get up and running quickly and build the exact infrastructure you need with root access to servers running 100% SSDs in state-of-the-art data centers around the world. Now, DigitalOcean is highly scalable to meet your demands. I talked about this, how you can move from a very small project to a very big project just by sliding a control panel inside your UI. And they've got an extremely active community, which I like because it means that people are passionate about the service, that they want to help people who are just coming in. Now, I've been playing with DigitalOcean for two projects that I'm hoping to bring on to Know How. One is a no-brainer. That's running Minecraft in DigitalOcean. You can bring up a massive-scale Minecraft battle with just a couple of pennies. And another one is running Chrome in a container so that I can run a completely secure, unable-to-infect-my-system browser. Folks, DigitalOcean can do it for you. They did it for me, and I want you to get started now. Go ahead and deploy an SSD cloud server and be up and running in as little as 55 seconds. DigitalOcean has incredibly affordable and straightforward pricing with servers starting at just $5 per month. There's also hourly pricing available, starting at less than a penny per hour. But we're going to make it so that you can get started today and deploy your SSD cloud server for free. Just visit DigitalOcean.com and create an account. Once you confirm your email and account information, go to the billing section and enter the promo code KNOWHOW for a free $10 credit.
That's plenty to get started and explore what DigitalOcean can do for you. That's DigitalOcean.com, DigitalOcean.com. And once you sign up, enter the code KNOWHOW in the billing section to get your free $10 credit. And we thank DigitalOcean for their support of KNOWHOW. Okay, so Ryan, the Core from Razer. This was an idea of giving myself an enclosure that I can put a full-size graphics card. It has the power supply. And then connect via Thunderbolt 3 USB-C back to my Core laptop. In this case, the Razer Blade Stealth. And give my Ultrabook desktop gaming power. You got to play with it. Does it actually live up to the hype?
Yeah, it does. It works. It functions. I didn't get a chance to actually benchmark it. But I got to see it running a game in real time and got to see it disconnect and reconnect and how that process works. And it functions as we hoped it would do, for sure.
And, you know, there were some issues about what kind of video cards it would work with. Right now, is it limited to Radeon?
So it's not limited to Radeon, but there's a specific capability of it limited to AMD's Radeon. So they released a driver that supported a technology called X-Connect. Idea is that if you're running a game or you're running anything that's running off the discrete GPU, the external GPU, if you just suddenly unplug the device, which people are used to doing on USB or Thunderbolt, that it gracefully handles that. And so basically what it does is it force closes all of the 3D things that were running on it. But the operating system remains. It does a blue screen. And all of the other things that you were doing remain there. You don't have to worry about rebooting. And when you reconnect, it gracefully reloads that driver. You could restart those applications and do that. As of today, the NVIDIA driver does not support that capability. So if you're playing a game and you unplug it, most of the time you get a lockup or a blue screen of some kind. Both Razer and NVIDIA said, by the time these are actually shipping to consumers, NVIDIA will have a driver that supports that, but we just haven't seen it yet.
Right, right. Is it worth it? I mean, it is a costly piece of gear. If they can extend the capabilities to all USB-C connected laptops, is this something that every mobile worker should have just to get that little extra GPU power when they get home?
I don't think it's something that everybody will need because the amount of GPU horsepower you're getting in it or that you should be putting in it is way more than the average person needs. If you're not a gamer or you're not doing rendering work or you're not really utilizing GPU horsepower to its fullest, I think you're better off if you need a small amount of that, either getting a laptop that has a discrete GPU in it, a small discrete GPU, or depending on the Intel integrated graphics that are, they're getting better. They're good enough for most tasks. I agree that it's pretty expensive. The Razer Core is $500 if you buy it on its own. $400 if you buy it with one of the Razer Stealth laptops, I guess.
Right.
It won't work with every laptop that has a Thunderbolt 3 connection on it. It requires work in the BIOS, work in the UEFI on that host system to be able to properly do that. So, but they have said, they told me at GDC when I met with them, that they're not locking anybody out. If Dell or HP or whoever builds a laptop and they properly implement support for it, the Razer Core will function with it. And that's obviously the ideal for everybody, is that you get this kind of one unified thing. So if I have a Dell XPS 15, they update the BIOS for it. It supports external graphics. I buy that for $500. It comes with the power supply. You throw in your GPU and you go. I still see. I saw a lot of people say after that announcement that $500 was pretty steep for essentially what is a housing, a PCI Express bridge card, and a power supply.
Right. Right.
And there's validity to that concern for sure.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but the cost comes from the fact that it's the only one. So they know
right.
they're occupying a unique position in the market, and yeah, they want to get their money out of it. But yeah, if you broke down the parts, you could. Yeah, they're making a healthy profit on that.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. I know you got to go, but before you go, we do want to throw one of our fans' questions at you.
Okay.
What do we got, Brian?
All right. This one comes from Marcelo. He asks, what SSD do you guys think I should buy? A 640 gigabyte SanDisk SSD Plus or a 120 gigabyte Samsung Evo 850. I had a really bad experience with a Kingston V300, and I don't want to buy a crummy, he didn't say crummy,
yes,
SSD again. Thanks.
Now, Ryan, we gave him advice a year and some ago when he was first considering this, and we told him, stay away from value SSDs. They're just not worth it. You don't save enough money from buying a regular SSD over a value SSD to justify getting a value SSD. Are you down with that?
I agree with that sentiment for the most part. I just looked up. I wanted to see what these prices were. So the SanDisk SSD Plus 240, you can pick up for $64. And the Samsung 850 Evo 120, with half the capacity, is the same price at about $66. So it is a kind of a tough decision to make. I can see that, right? The ability to double your capacity for the same price is very, very tempting.
But
you just never know, right? Like, I'm trying to find out now, like, what controller that SSD uses. Sometimes they're hard to find. I'm almost to the point where I believe that the controllers and firmware are standardized between, like, who do you've got? You've got Phison, you've got who are the other ones? Silicon Motion really isn't really doing that stuff anymore. But like the controllers that exist in so many different platforms that I almost want to say, yeah, we're probably at a place where it's commoditized enough that you're okay with it. But if it were me, if you're asking me, I'm buying the 850 Evo. It's going to be faster, and it's going to be – you're going to have a little bit more faith in it. You're going to have a little bit more trust in what it's going to do. Or you buy the SanDisk SSD Plus 240 gig, and you're very diligent about backing up.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Right. Those are your options.
That's what I was going to say, is that I would use it as, like, if I was going to do a gaming PC build or something like that, I would just install games on it and have, like, a spinning backup drive or something where I have all my photos or things that are essential that I don't want to lose.
Yeah.
And I get that you want to keep your costs low. I understand that. But you can get decent SSDs, not off-brands, not the reject parts that get rebranded, but decent SSDs for, you know, not that much more. If it comes down to buying a $60 SSD or an $85 SSD, it's worth it to save up during that time, you know, over the course of however many months you need to do that, to get the better SSD. It's going to be with you for a very, very, very long time, and you will regret it if you get the crappy one. And I'll say,
that's a good point. I just looked. The 250 gig of the 850 Evo is $87.
Yeah.
So it's about $21 difference to get a little bit better peace of mind, as well as a little bit better performance with your solid state. And again, this is where all your data is, where your OS lives. Even if you're diligent about backing up, the hassle of having to reformat and reinstall and kind of load up your system again would not be worth it.
Yeah, and for me, there's three brands that I pay attention to. Samsung, and Samsung always has good stuff. They had an issue, but that's been fixed. Intel isn't always the highest performance, but they make really durable gear. And I have a soft spot for Kingston just because I use them forever in my enterprise applications, and that's the one I will continue to use in the enterprise application. So yeah, everyone's going to have the brands that they like, but those are the three brands I trust. I've never lost a bit on any of those. So, go figure. Ryan Shrout from PC Perspective, thank you so very much for joining us. You've made our gamer extravaganza. Wait, what did you call it?
Gamer extravaganza.
You made our great gamer extravaganza. Could you please tell the folks at home, in case they don't know already, where they can find you, where they can find PC Perspective, and when they should be tuning in for one of the best hardware podcasts on the internet?
Well, I'm actually on two of the best. So This Week in Computer Hardware here on the TWiT Network is recorded on Thursdays at 3:30 p.m. Eastern, 12:30 Pacific. And obviously you can get that here at twit.tv/twitch, T-W-I-C-H. And then obviously the rest of our stuff is at PC Perspective, PCPER.com, PCPER.com. We've got a lot of guys that do great content, whether it be cases or motherboards or video cards. Our most recent foray has been into doing system builds for VR, like we're doing here on the new Screensavers, but over several different price points. We've got anywhere from a $900 to a $2,500 system, depending on what your budget happens to be. So that's If I'm not here on a show with you guys, I'm at PCPer.com. That's pretty much what I do.
Fantastic. It is always a pleasure and an honor to speak with you. And I've run into you into a couple of live events, which is fantastic. In fact, we bumped into each other in Barcelona, which was a little strange, but it was always nice to see a friendly face. Thank you, sir, again. We will invite you back whenever you have time because we value your knowledge.
Thank you very much.
Ryan Shrout, and we bid you farewell. Well, that was fun.
Yeah. I mean,
we could actually call the show right now. We could call
it. End it there.
Just end it. But we're not going to because we've got more of the extravaganza to bring your way. Now, when we come back, I want to show them some peripherals.
Okay.
Okay. Because specifically, I want to show them some peripherals that I've
collected. Tell you've been doing some long-term testing.
I have.
Because they are quite greasy.
They're very greasy. Although the headset, you're going to love.
I will not try it on, but I will take your word for it.
You really should. But before we make Brian, now Sam's calling you Ryan. And before we make Cranky Hippo try on my really greasy headset, let's take a moment to thank the sponsor of this episode of Know How. Now, let me ask you something. Do you have media files? Of course you do. Do you have pictures? Of course you do. Do you listen to music? Of course you do. Unless, of course, you can't actually listen to music. I'm sorry if that's the case with you. But if not, you understand the hassle of trying to gather together all of your media, all of your content, from your pictures to your movies to your music to the little bits and pieces of memories that you've gathered in your phones, your tablets, your laptops, your desktop. It is a pain to try to amalgamate it, to bring it all together and give it some sort of organization. You could go from device to device to device to copy them off and deal with all the restrictions and the DRM and try to figure out some sort of semblance of organization for every little bit of content you may have on all your devices. Or you could use Unity. Unity is the free way to organize your media and have it accessible on all your mobile devices. Unity is a free, easy-to-install personal media server that connects your devices so that you can access all of your content on the go without syncing, without uploading, and without configuring. Visit getunity.com/knowhow, and you can immediately stream your entire music collection to your mobile devices, even iTunes Music. You can stream your movie collection while you're traveling. You can share any of your media with your friends via peer-to-peer transfer, and your friends can stream directly to your computer. You can install Unity on every computer that you want to access, and Unity will unify all of your media and files into one organized menu in your Unity app. You can also automatically merge iTunes accounts and libraries. For example, if you've got a phone for you and another phone for a brother or a sister or a daughter or a son. Yeah, I know that you have multiple iTunes accounts. Well, bring them together with Unity. It doesn't matter if you've bought this song on that account and that movie on this account. It all looks like one big pile of content. That's the promise of Unity. You can also access all your Lightroom or Apple photo libraries and photo albums, and you can post photos stored on your computers directly to Instagram, as well as streaming and sharing your GoPro videos. You can use AirPlay to stream music or video to your TV, and you can let Unity be the thing that unifies your media life. Now, here's what we want you to do. We want you to create your own private, personal media server at getunity.com/knowhow. That's getunity.com/knowhow. And access all your media and files on your mobile devices for free. That should be a pretty easy deal, yeah? Just go to GetUnity. That's GetUnity.com/knowhow. And we thank Unity for their support of KnowHow. Hey, Brian.
Yo.
Extravaganza?
Yes.
Let's
keep it going.
Okay,
keep
so
it going.
Let's get these crummy SSDs out of here. By the way, I'm just going to take this one.
I'll take this one.
Yeah,
then.
No, you can keep that if I get this. No. Oh, okay. No, seriously, we got to bring those back.
I don't know what I'm missing out with.
I do want to show you some of the things that I've collected for gaming.
Uh-huh.
Now, this is kind of my pride and joy.
Now, bag?
You know that my favorite headset is an Audio-Technica, the new M7s. Those are great. They're fantastic. Mm-hmm. You need a little something else for gaming.
Because when you're gaming, you want a surround sound.
And that's what this is. Now, this is their Cloud 2. And I have to say, next to the M7, probably the most comfortable headset that I've ever worn. The cool thing about this is it can be used on PS3, PS4. It can be used on a computer via USB. It uses a standard 3.5mm three-prong plug, so I can have audio left, right, as well as my microphone.
Uh-huh.
But then it has this. This is a USB DSP. If you go to the overhead, Alex, a USB DSP that this plugs into. And this gives me all of my controls right at my fingertips. So everything from volume up and down to muting to permanent muting, if I you know, want to make sure I'm really, really,
really muted. Because
I'm about to talk smack about my teammates. and this will handle everything from echo cancellation, both in and out of the microphone and in and out of the headphones, which is nice because
that's
it means, yeah, all of that's handled here rather than in the computer. Oh, here, try these on. Seriously, I cleaned them.
All right. These actually look pretty new.
Tell me that that's not the most comfortable gaming headset you've ever tried.
Well, before I even put it on, it looks pretty nice. It's got like the steel frame.
This is their gunmetal version, and it's got memory foam in the cups.
So this is for your head then?
It is for your head. Now, they also include a couple of things. Like those cups I like when I'm doing typical gaming, but if it's going to be in a hot area, they have these. So these breathe a bit better. It's a different kind of material that, you know, it's not like those kind of seal.
Moisture. But these feel amazing.
Yeah.
Actually.
Right?
Yeah.
Right? And they're really good at their closed ears, so they're blocking out sound.
They're nice and soft. Mm-hmm.
And this is my favorite part. I'm not always using the microphone. I'm only using the microphone if I'm actually talking in a match. I don't like those headsets where you have to kind of like rotate it out of the way.
Fold it back, and it always gets caught on stuff.
They just did this.
It's detachable.
It's detachable, right.
Nice.
So it's got a little port on the bottom here, and all you got to do. Drop it like that.
Shoot it across the floor.
And suddenly, I have a gaming headset. Now, this is so well designed. I just love the care and attention that they put into this. And when you speak through this mic, you don't get any of the echo. The people on the other side aren't going to hear that little annoying reverb, because that's all taken out by the DSP contained inside the little USB device.
Very nice. Yeah, this looks like a pretty sweet kit. It's got the braided lines,
right,
so it doesn't get
non-tangle,
caught. Right,
non-tangle.
Yep, non-tangle.
And I think, actually, we've got a link here, Alex. This is less than $100. It used to be more last year, but now it's like $97 or $98. 53-millimeter drivers, USB and 3.5-millimeter operation. It's got that noise echo-canceling DSP, 15 to 25 kilohertz frequency response. It's got those memory foam ear pads. Again, the removable microphone. And the 7.1 virtual surround sound actually does work.
So you've tried it out?
Yeah. So nice. If you're in one of those games where something can be going behind you, it actually sounds like it's going behind you. It doesn't sound like it's coming from the left or the right. Well done.
These feel really nice. Like, I could wear these for a long period of time.
Yeah, yeah. I've actually used this in noisy environments, like in the middle of a knock.
Yeah.
And they can't hear the machine noise.
Yeah, you're a little bit muffled. It's fine, though. Like, if someone was yelling at me to stop gaming, I would probably hear them. My wife. But, you know.
Sorry about that. Okay, so let's go from headsets. By the way, we are going to do an in-depth. We're going to do a teardown of this and the new version, which I can't talk about yet. But
new version.
There's a new version.
Does that mean I can play with the old version?
Yeah, maybe. But they're hot. They're really hot. We're going to be having them on the new screensavers, I think, in 2 or 3 weeks when I get back from Hawaii.
Nice.
So if you want to see what a really good gaming headset looks like,
I like those.
Stay tabbed. All right. So let's go from audio to something that's a bit more in control. You need a mouse and a keyboard, right?
Yes, definitely.
I have found none that are better than this. I got this 2 years ago.
So this is a long-term test.
This is a
you
super
took this
long-term
very
test.
Seriously.
Yeah, I am totally dedicated to making sure that you get nothing but the best peripherals. So this is the Rocket. This is the Ryos MK Mark Glow. Now, it's not the super high-end one, because the super high-end one actually has, you can program the light pattern.
Oh, so with different colors and stuff, too? Or?
Right, right. But you combine this with either the Rocket Cone Pure or the Rocket Cone Optical, it's a really, really good gaming solution. In fact, I would put this up against Razer, and I really, really like Razer.
Nice.
The one thing is, this actually holds up better than a Razer set. Razor sets tend to gunk out after about a year.
You would know, because you do the long-term
test. I'm really, really sorry.
Yeah, no, my everyday gaming mouse is the Rocket XTD, I think. Gaming mouse. I love it.
But instead of listening to me, why don't we go ahead and listen to me?
So, you're a gamer. You bought a super high-performance gaming rig, purchased upgrades to make it even faster, paired it with a large, sexy, fast-response monitor, and shelled out enough cash to make it rain, geek style. That's a lot of money for gaming performance, so then why are you using anything but a high-performance input system? That's the question we tried to answer with the Cone Pure, the Cone Pure Optical, and the Ryos Glow. Now, these are gaming peripherals, and we know that some people get squeamish around video violence, so we've replaced any objectionable scenes with cute, cuddly Shutterstock animals. The Kone Pure and Kone Pure Optical are mid-range, high-performance gaming mice from Rocket, a company that specializes in gaming peripherals. The Kone Pure features an 8200 DPI sensor that can be adjusted up and down in sensitivity in 200 DPI increments, while the Kone Pure Optical sports a 4000 DPI sensor that can be adjusted in 400 DPI increments, both of which can be changed on the fly with a rocker switch behind the Titan wheel scrolling control. Both the Kone Pure and Kone Pure Optical are contoured for the average hand and covered in a soft-touch material that should reduce gamer sweat. Rocket adds a nice touch by braiding their cable so as to reduce the rat's nest phenomenon common with USB peripherals. Both mice use Omron mechanical switch tech for positive clicky feedback and have 7 programmable buttons and the wheel for a total of 9 inputs. Half a megabyte of onboard memory allows them to store up to 5 primary button mapping profiles of those 9 input points, plus an additional 9 with the Easy Shift button duplicator. A 32-bit Turbo Core V2 processor drives both the Kone Pure and the Kone Pure Optical, with that power also letting Rocket add a tracking and distance control unit to the Pure, which gives the mouse better tracking on difficult surfaces and allows players to lift without moving the cursor. A comprehensive list of customizable features is found in the Rocket Utility, which also gives you control of the LEDs, which can be set to any of 16.8 million colors. The Ryos MK Glow is the middle option of Rocket's new line of gaming keyboards. The Glow uses Cherry MX mechanical switches, which give it a few advantages over inexpensive membrane keyboards, such as greater durability and the ability to register a keystroke without having to press the key all the way down. Each key is illuminated by a LED under the cap, and the whole kit is covered in anti-smudge material. 5 macro buttons line the left of the Glow, and a non-detachable wrist rest adds an additional 3 thumb keys. All keys are programmable, with a 32-bit ARM Cortex processor and 2 megabytes of flash memory, letting you assign secondary functions and store over 500 macros. Used together, the Ryos and the Kone Pure series of mice can combine their features through Rocket's talk function, and it's in the combination of those features that I found the Rocket system to be one heck of a boost for gaming. Both the Kone Pure and the Kone Pure Optical are accurate, extremely accurate, especially when sitting on one of Rocket's Hero mouse pads. The 2D wheel is deliberately rough, with regular indents to allow users to easily scroll through weapons by feel, meaning that there are fewer instances where you flip past the weapon you want. The Adjust DPI rocker switch was incredibly useful when switching between normal movement and the fine aiming of a sniper rifle, easy to the point of becoming second nature. Importantly, both the Kone Pure and the Kone Pure Optical felt good in my hands, even after hours of gaming. However, for me, the standout of our Rocket Pack has to be the Ryos. Key presses were quick, the mechanical action was smooth, and I ended up using the programming feature far more than I thought I would. And then there were the macros. Macros for every game, every style, every player, every possible way to play. In the end, Rocket makes some fantastic input devices. From their Kone series of mice to their Ryos keyboards, even down to their Hero mouse pad. They definitely get those who expect a little more from their implements of video game mayhem. The Rocket Kone Pure, Kone Pure Optical, and Ryos MK Glow are definitely solid choices for the gamer. You can find them online now for less than $80 for the mice and $140 for the keyboard.
Now, I do apologize. I realize instead of the cute cuddly kitten, we should have used a corgi.
You know, I'm okay with that. I'll save the corgi for one of my videos, but I also noticed that even if you have really nice peripherals, that's not going to make you a better gamer.
No, I'm really bad. I'm really bad.
It's okay.
You know what? I'm okay with it. I die a lot. It's
if cool. You have fun, that's all that matters.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Speaking of having fun,
right?
We like Predators. The Predator desktop series is actually pretty good. The Predator laptop series is pretty good. We just saw the Predator 34-inch monitor. We're going to have extensive reviews on everything, including this, because
this
was supposed to go to me, but it got intercepted by my erstwhile co-host. What is this, Brian?
This is the Acer Predator G6, their newest one. This is their top-of-the-line one that comes in at $2,000 or $1,999.
It actually will work with virtual reality gaming headsets.
Yeah.
Now, there were a few things about the Predator line that they continued with this, and I'm going to let you spec it out. But one of the things that we enjoyed about this is it is a gaming desktop. It's
absolutely
got plenty of power. but it doesn't sound really loud.
Oh, no, this thing is whisper quiet. And the only time I've ever heard it is when I physically, well, not physically, but through software, turn the fan on max. Right. Otherwise, even when I'm gaming, I do not hear this thing at all.
And that's actually kind of important to me, because I've had some really powerful desktops that we've benched at my lab in San Francisco. Yeah. And it's nice to have all that power, but when you have to play it with a headset because it's loud, I'm not.
Well, I mean, I don't know about most people, but I keep this, so down in the basement, I keep this on the table about 2 feet away from me. Not even under the table, because I don't want to collect any dust and stuff. Beauty is subjective, so but I do
like
looking
like
at it.
Or you hate this.
It's, so I wanted to look at it. I keep it on the desk, and I absolutely do not hear anything from this machine.
This is the dream case of a 15-year-old building his first gaming PC. Right?
It really is.
It's Batman inspired. All right, let's open this bad boy, and you can tell us all about the spec prawn. Oh, wait, hold on.
Okay, so yeah, gotcha. Opening it is not necessarily the most easy thing to do. But once you get that that tank track back of it off, you just pull back. You have two Phillips screws on the side, and then you can pull the panel off. And both sides come off really easily. If you look on the panel, there's a little connector for the LEDs that come on. Obviously, we can't show those because it's not plugged in at the moment.
All right, what's in here?
All right, So this is their top-of-the-line model, meaning it comes with the Intel i7 67K quad-core running at 4 gigahertz. It has 16 gigabytes of RAM, 2x8 modules of DDR4 running at 2100 megahertz. It has two hard drives. The one you can see here is these 2 terabyte Seagate spinning drive, and then... Because we removed the graphics card so that we could see this. This is the 256 gigabyte Lite-On SSD, which is super speedy for loading up games.
Although we clarified this with Ryan, that is an M.2, but it's running in mSATA mode. It's in SATA mode. So,
but it does still go pretty quick.
It is pretty quick. Although, if you wanted faster, you would put in a true M.2 PCI attached.
We had one laying around here. We might have to test it out. Other than that,
don't forget this. It's got that.
Yeah, I mean, this is probably the most essential part.
That's the most expensive part.
Well, that too, yeah. We had to take it out just so we could get a look at that SSD. But this is the GTX 980. Definitely a beast of a card.
That's the reference design.
The reference design, which I think looks pretty cool. But, I mean, with this case, this is designed as a plug-and-play PC gaming machine, so you're not going to be opening it up and changing out parts a lot or anything like that. So you're not actually going to see this very well.
And we've said this about the Predator series, which is if you're one of these people who likes to forever tinker with your machine and upgrade...
This isn't the one for
you. This is not the one. Because
this hard drive's locked in. You can't slide it out.
Cable management is something to be desired.
Yeah, this cool.
It's got that huge cooler on the CPU,
which I'm fine with that. It is a beast of a cooler. It's a cool master. It doesn't make a lot of noise. Right. So and
730
this thing stays
watt
cool.
Power supply. Yeah, one of the things that I actually really enjoy about this is if you look, the caps are really good. I always look for quality caps. This actually does have really good quality caps and. That's going to tell me how long it's going to last.
Yeah, definitely.
Also, there is space to upgrade your memory. So if you want to bump up the memory, there are still two slots available.
You will have to remove the cooler to get any access to the RAM slots back there.
Right. Also, as before, there is only one PCI Express 16 slot. So no SLI.
Which makes me sad, but it does come built-in Wi-Fi, Bluetooth. So if you want to connect stuff like that, that's handy to have.
I do wish, because this was on my wish list from the last Predator. You've got two PCI Express 2X slots here.
Mm-hmm.
I need a 4. Because that's what I need to put a PCIe attached storage device.
Right. Well, once again, this is not a computer you would buy because you want to modify it at any point. This is the computer you buy because you want a gaming rig. You want to plug it in and have it just blow games out of the water off the bat. And you're willing to pay $2,000 and not worry about it because it just works.
Yeah. Well, folks, Brian is actually going to give you the full review on this because he won't let me take it back. I tried and he tried to stab me.
No. Yeah. I think if you remember correctly from the first Predator that you let me play with,
There was some stabbing.
I would cut you if you had time to bleed, Padre.
Folks, we're going to give you all of this. We're going to give you the complete in-depth review of the Predator and of the Predator 34 monitor, as well as some reviews of some additional gaming peripherals in a future gaming extravaganza.
Right.
But unfortunately, that's all the time. Actually, we're way over the time for this episode of Know How.
Well, that's because Ryan was awesome.
He was awesome. He's too much awesome to contain in one episode. We'll remember that for next time. If they want to find the show notes, so everything from Ryan's interview, everything from the links for all the devices that we showed off, where can they go?
They can go to twit.tv/KH. You can click on old past episodes. There's also links for downloading different versions of the episode. Also, subscribe if you have a chance. And like Padre said, the show notes should have all the links. I think this one was from last Thursday or a few Thursdays ago. And it's got all the step-by-step stuff for our drone FPV 50 build with some of the links to the FPV visors or goggles that you would wear.
Whoop. Little goggles.
Yeah.
Gotta love that. Also, don't forget that you can find us on our Google Plus group. Just go to Google Plus, look for Know How. We've got almost 10,000 Kitas. That's know-it-alls.
I was wondering what that was.
They can't be KIAs. That's disrespectful. No. So we've got a bunch of Kitas in there who are willing to help you with their project. Or if you're an expert DIYer, maker, if you like to put things together, if you like to assemble your own gaming desktop, please join. Please jump in. Please lend your voice. Because the more Kitas we have, the more knowledge we have available to us.
But that's not the only place you can find us on the interwebs.
No.
We're also on Twitter. If you want a behind-the-scenes look at what's coming up, or if you want to see how Padre preps for for pre-recorded know-hows, like I did earlier before this episode,
yeah, how about that?
You should follow us on Twitter. I am at @cranky_hippo.
And I am at @PadreSJ. And our director, Jim Bob. You can find him at ANELF3.
Right.
Yeah, Jim Bob.
Jim
Bob.
Yeah.
ANELF3 is ANELF3. Please say hi to Jim Bob. Until next time. Oh, Jim Bob, who's having a Manhattan.
Could be a mint julep.
How about that? I'm Father Robert Ballister, the digital Jesuit.
And now that you know how. No, no, wait.
Have you forgotten your name?
I'm Brian Burnett.
And now that you know how.
Go do it. It's been a long day.